From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the last weekend of August 2019. Where did the summer go? There's a bunch of stuff happening in town this weekend. It's the Big Pig Barbecue Fest at the lakefront. ZZ Top is at the BMO Harris Pavilion this Wednesday, and the comedy and magic of Penn and Teller are at the Riverside Theater Friday. And the Brewers travel to Wrigley for a weekend series with the Cubs. Who says cops don't have a sense of humor? In Redding, California, someone stole a van full of donuts, and the official police response from the cops was, "We were just heartbroken." Well, here's some shocking news. Connecticut cops got multiple reports of a park being used as a hookup spot for lewd and sexual behavior. But even the cops weren't ready for what they found. They arrested six senior citizens, one of whom was an 85-year-old woman. But it does give you hope, doesn't it? In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Steve Giles, Tom Pappenfuss, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. After weeks of selling, the stock markets in the United States turned the corner and headed north. NASDAQ up 2.7% this week, tacking on 211 points to close at 79.63. The broader markets, the S&P Stock Composite 500, climbed 2.8%, up 79 points this week, closed at 29.26, up with dividends 18.3% for the year. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 3%, tacking on 771 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 26,400 year-to-date. Dow is up 15%. You know, Kyle, it kind of depends upon what day you're talking about this month with the stock market, whether we've been talking to the Chinese, whether they're interested in talking or not, on again, off again. But the news this week is clearly about engaging the Chinese yet again to try to resolve some of the trade issues. The markets went higher.
Yeah, you know, I think, Bob, such an interesting month it's been. It's largely been macro news or these, you know, big ticket items that have driven the stocks for the month. It hasn't been, you know, the fundamentals of the market. It hasn't been earnings, as we so often have seen. It's really been those big ticket items. And you look at risk on, risk off for the month of August, which was a bit more volatile than what we'd typically expect. You know, you had all sectors trading together 12 days during the month, and that's almost unheard of to have every single sector moving that many days together. The good news there maybe is more than half of those were positive days with those sectors moving all to the upside. The bad news, though, is that if you've got all the sectors moving together, it doesn't give you a lot of place to hide in the stock market should we see some volatility.
Well, and it also dampens down correlation. Pretty unusual to see stocks and bonds moving in the same direction for a good part of this month. Betas are changing, correlations going up, and you know we saw some of that prior to the last downturn, so we're going to need to keep an eye on that. The whole point of correlation is if one area of your portfolio gets hit, something in another area should go up to offset the decline in the first asset class, and correlation has been a cornerstone of risk reduction for decades. And, you know, it's pretty interesting to see correlation change this month.
Yeah, commodity prices, international stocks, you really go down the list of things that should be behaving differently. You know, zig is another thing, zags, and really we've seen a lot of that, at least for the month of August, trade together. And so, as you say, I think you can throw correlation a little bit out the window right now. Hopefully we can get back to a market where things trade in a little bit more typical fashion, where you see bonds maybe holding steady as stocks fall, where you see even bonds sell off a little bit as stocks run higher, which is what we would expect to see, and we just haven't seen that yet.
Interest rates keep going down. Steve, what's your take on current events?
Well, you know, I agree, Bob. To your point on interest rates continue to go down, I think it lends more of an argument and more support to stocks. Even though we have had a lot of volatility because of recent events around the globe, but with trade tensions with China, tariffs, stuff going on in Britain and in Hong Kong, The earnings yield on the market still is much, much higher than what you're going to find in a 10-year treasury. And that, to me, is enough of a tailwind to continue to see some support for stocks as we close out the year.
Pretty interesting to see the 10-year at 1.5% yield. You know, consider that there's $16 trillion of negative yielding bonds in Europe. Big number, $16 trillion. Makes 1.5% look pretty good.
Yeah, it absolutely does, Bob. Right now, the U.S. remains the safe haven for fixed income investors around the globe. We talked a lot a few weeks ago when we had the inversion in the yield curve about the pressure you're seeing in those intermediate ranges as foreign investors and as people look for the U.S. as a safe haven, maybe artificially pulling that yield down. Compare and contrast that with the earnings yield you're getting up near 6% when you factor in our PE ratios, and the market right now looks pretty fairly valued.
Tom, you manage a lot of money for us. You got to be happy with the results. Pretty bumpy ride, of course, this last month or so. But year to date, people are looking pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, despite a lot of the uncertainty and a lot of the fears that people have, and obviously the buzzword we hear quite a bit now with client meetings is, you know, recession and, you know, when is that going to happen or if that may happen. And we're seeing a volatile market that appears to be trading sideways, going two steps forward, two steps back. You know, I think one of the practices, you know, we were just talking about a minute ago is just diversification becomes really important. It's really hard to know which direction this market may go here in the short term. If the trade concerns alleviate, you could see the market run up really quick. However, if this keeps carrying on and we start to see growth forecasts and expectations keep getting revised downward, you'll start to see, you know, more of a flight towards safer, perhaps, you know, value-oriented or dividend-paying stocks. So it becomes, you know, more important to become a balance right now, and we're starting to look at, you know, dividend-paying and more defensive areas of the market.
Tom, I think that's a great point when you consider that growth stocks traditionally don't pay dividends. If an investor is a long-term investor and they know they want to own stocks, hey, if the market's going to go sideways, pay me a dividend. You're going to find that more traditionally on the value side of the equation.
You know, especially the growth stocks these days, Steve, a lot of the tech stocks running into buzzsaws of antitrust issues, privacy issues, now the slowdown in China. A lot of the defensive stocks like utilities, they don't do business in China. Insurance companies, the banks, even the telecoms, somewhat isolated from global events. As you're well aware, we've never had a recession in U.S. history that started overseas. Of course, doesn't mean we can't have one and won't have one, but it's never happened. And the reason is simple. We have a closed economy. Only 12% of our GDP is exports. You know, compare that to 44% for Germany. Germany's getting whacked right now because the Chinese aren't calling them as much. Similar issue in China, 20%, a little over 20% of their economy is exports. So if trade goes down, you know, the developed nations that export a lot just are going to take a hit. So the point is, we have a closed society in the United States. It's clear to me that we're not in recession now. The risks have absolutely gone up this last month with the acceleration of the trade conflict. And the inverted yield curve could be accurate. I think it's a little bit different this time. The last seven recessions were preceded by an inverted yield curve, but that doesn't mean every time we have an inverted yield curve, we go in a recession. A couple of times it inverted and a recession didn't follow. But when you look at the U.S. economy, 70% is consumer spending. Consumers, pretty good shape. Balance sheets are in good shape. Household wealth, highest it's ever been. 16% is government spending. That's hanging in there. 14% of business spending, that's what's falling off the cliff. But if you do the math, it's not a large enough piece of the economy to really put us in a significant downturn. Companies are going to have to spend at some point in time. But the tax bill was really intended to encourage business spending that the president signed in December 17. He kind of shot himself in the foot that next month by declaring the trade wars, because then businesses just put a brake on spending. And that's what everybody's watching. Manufacturing here in the United States is contracting now. So that doesn't mean growth is slowing. They're going backwards. They're contracting. Business spending continues to decline. So that's the area that, you know, that we really need to see turn around, I think, to cross that off our worry list and see that, you know, we turn to some sense of normalcy. You know, Kyle, you and I have been spending some time recently looking over a lot of data points, and, you know, I continue to be impressed with their earnings projections for the next couple of years. You know, it is all about earnings. Steve, you mentioned lower interest rates, good for stocks. We all know it's interest rates and earnings that move stocks up and down. But, you know, after a year of an earnings recession, it's pretty encouraging to see that we're basically going back to pretty good earnings numbers for the next couple of years.
Absolutely, Bob. You know, I think we're not quite out of the woods yet as far as that earnings recession is concerned. The third quarter looks pretty weak here as well. And when we finally start getting numbers reported on the third quarter, you know, come mid-October and beyond, you know, I think investors are going to be maybe a little disappointed. The interesting thing, though, is the markets are still up 18% for the year if you look at the S&P, including dividends. And so I think a lot of that is digesting what we expect for next year. And, you know, even beyond that, because, you know, investors aren't focused strictly on what has happened, but more of them focused on what we expect for stocks going forward. And you look at earnings forecasts for the S&P for 2020, we're talking about 11% about earnings growth year over year. And that's a pretty big number. And then you look at 2021 and beyond, and you maybe back that off a little bit down to the high single digits. But that's still a really big number, and that's going to help stocks as we look beyond not just the next quarter, but, you know, into the next couple of years.
And go ahead, Steve.
Well, the other favorable thing, too, is that with the global slowdown, you, of course, have Europe slowing down, China slowing down, Germany's in a recession. Who knows what's going on in Britain? That the U.S. does have at least seem to have its act together with respect to a reacceleration of earnings.
Some of the forecasts I read, Steve, you know, all have this caveat and disclaimer of assuming that the trade wars don't intensify from here. I mean, we all know that even if they call off the trade conflicts now, it's done considerable damage to the global economy. So, you know, that's an encumbrance, if you will, on equity prices. So should the trade wars intensify, you know, I'm going to change my story. I think that could be enough to put us in perhaps a mild recession. You know, the good news is we didn't build up the excesses like we did in 07 with junk mortgages and housing like we did with tech stocks in 2000. So the pros are thinking this next one could be a little milder than normal. Bad side of the story is we don't have the fiscal monetary policy responses like we normally do, which would suggest that it's going to be a little bit longer than the 4 to 6 quarters that we have. You know, I read an interesting interview with Lizanne Saunders, the economist at Schwab, that said, you know, so often we find out after the fact that we've been in a recession for 4 months or more. And her point was that she wouldn't be surprised to find out if we were in a recession right now in the United States. And that, you know, when they compile all the data points down the road, you know, we don't know for a while yet what's going on. So they're hard to predict. I think for most investors, it's important to know you're at the tail end of a cycle, not the beginning of a cycle. I think investors need to know that growth stocks tend to sink like rocks at the end of a downturn. Value stocks tend to hold up better. And I think what investors really need to take away from this is a blink of an eye and recessions are over. They don't last that long. And the big money starts looking for entry points somewhere during the recession. So you don't need to hunker down. You don't need to get rid of all your stocks. You're not going to need all your money in the next couple of years. But, you know, we've been urging caution now for the better part of a year. Markets year over year through the summer really haven't gone anywhere. So we look pretty smart on that. Make sure you got enough money to tide you over for 5-6 years in nice, safe places. Fixed income and cash, and then migrate a little bit over to value. You know, I was mentioning to someone when I saw the news release that GDP grew 2% this last quarter. We all know trend line. So we had 3% GDP growth last year, 2% probably this year, maybe 1% GDP next year. So the economy is clearly slowing, and there are certain things you do, certain things you don't do at that point in the cycle. And you know, just protect yourself from despondency when the markets go down. People tend to think that it's going to last forever. They never do. Ultimately, the sun comes out. Ultimately, the skies part and the sun will shine. But this time around, you know, I think we're going to be close. But my best guess, as I sit here today, is that the U.S. may avoid a recession next year. Let's talk about some of the economic indicators. Kyle, here's one. The durable goods order came out a little bit higher than expected.
Yeah, you know, you look at durable goods, especially aircraft orders that tend to be such a big piece of that. And, you know, I think any time you're spending the kind of money you spend on those goods, you hope to see a pretty good number there. And 2.1% July increase from the month of June, and you look year over year, and, you know, you're up a considerable number there as well. I think, you know, it's a good sign for the economy that at the very least we're maybe not quite in that recession that some people think we might be in, that durable goods are still growing.
Tom, if you take a look at a couple of the consumer numbers, you know, one contradicts the other. But let's start with consumer confidence, higher than expected. That's a good number.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's important to know that relative to historical numbers, I mean, consumer confidence is still pretty high and elevated. And as you mentioned, you know, if we are really worried about a recession and we are a 70% consumer-driven economy, the consumer seems to be in a pretty good place right now.
You know, and then along with that consumer spending, the July number came out a little bit higher than they were thinking. But then consumer sentiment. So consumer confidence is the question, how do you feel now? The consumer sentiment question is, how do you think you're going to feel 6 months from now? And it's interesting that the consumer sentiment number posted its largest monthly decline in 7 years. So people are basically in English saying, hey, you know, I feel pretty good right now, but I'm not sure I'm going to feel so great 6 months from now. So I find that, you know, not only contradictory, but, you know, maybe the bloom is off the rose here on the consumer confidence numbers, and that could dovetail into a decline in consumer spending, and, of course, that could birth the next downturn.
You know, Bob, I think it's interesting with those sentiment numbers that the respondents all indicated that they were, I'm sorry, not all, one-third of all the respondents indicated without being prompted that tariffs were on their mind, and that's why their sentiment was a little bit lower.
And Steve, the concern, I think, with consumer sentiment is that because 70% of our economy is consumer spending, if consumers feel like things are going to get worse, they're going to start to tighten the purse strings now. And what ultimately happens if you don't spend and 70% of your economy is spending is that, yeah, your economy is going to slow. And so you're going to feel worse in the future because of the choices you made today. And so you get that negative feedback loop. You get that self-fulfilling prophecy where the expectations for things to get worse cause things to get worse. And I think that's the thing we're trying to avoid. That's the thing that uncertainty creates. The problems that uncertainty creates for our economy is you want consumers to feel good. You want them to save a little bit, but you want them to keep spending. Otherwise, you fall into a recession.
And that's why it's so hard to predict recessions, because we're not trying to track data points. We're trying to track confidence. We're trying to track how worried people get. And, you know, you look at the financial crisis, housing didn't represent that big a piece of the economy, but people freaked out when their home values went down after being told houses never go down in value. They just keep going up and up and up, right? Y2K, look at that. You know, tech stocks weren't that big a piece of the economy then, but when Sun Microsystems just evaporated, when Enron gone, when WorldCom just blew up, people started freaking out. And then 9/11 came along and put us into a significant downturn. So it's these crises of confidence that, you know, really exacerbate the downturns, and that's why it's so hard to predict. So, you know, Tom, as you said, I think it's so important to build balanced portfolios, make sure you got an answer for anything in your portfolio. That's what stands the test of time. Well, as a guy that works for a living, I'm really looking forward to Labor Day. You know, where guys like us that work for a living, work hard, get to celebrate our labor. For those that are listening to the show that used to work for a living, thanks for paving the way for us. You also are entitled to put your feet up on this coming Monday. Thanks for listening to the show, folks. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.